Bennett. Oh, there it is. Jacob Thumb. No, that's not the name of the show. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, me, Dr. Tim Slecker, and, well, Jacob's Thumb and Jacob, chairman of the board here on Friday. Holy crap, 2026 Friday. And Jacob, your thumb, producer's choice. This show's on you, my friend.
And Tim, you're going to be excited to hear this. I left all the prep work to my thumb for this episode. So whatever he came up with, that's what we're going with. I haven't seen any of this. And I'll tell you, it's hard to type with just one thumb. So I was kind of working on these questions for quite some time. But I think it's going to be one of our best ones of the whole year so far.
Well, I just did you forget you have two thumbs?
That one isn't a producer.
Oh, yeah.
I used my right thumb to let you know it's time to talk, and my left thumb I suck on sometimes when I'm sad. But other than that, left thumb doesn't really do much around here.
Content creator.
Right thumb, content creator. Right thumb. Left thumb, lazy. Left thumb,
lazy. Just
lazy bum thumb.
Oh, yeah.
Doing a little bit of Arthur Fonzarelli from the Happy Days. Hey. Yeah, I knew Lupinacci would get that. Jacob's like, Happy Days? Jacob,
you've jumped the shark on this one, Tim. I'm seizing the means of production here, Tim. This intro is awful, so we're just going to start the show. I can't put up with this anymore.
For choo choo, yeah. Producer Jacob's choice, chairman of the board.
Ow! You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices.
You chose poorly.
Hey, unless this is a nude loving, get the hell off my property.
You can't own property, man.
I can, but that's because I'm not a penniless hippie.
Fellas, that's a clip from Futurama, and I'm wondering if you have any idea why I chose that clip to introduce our topic for today. Do you have any guesses?
No idea.
Man, I'm
unless it's because you want to ask us about our favorite animated television series, maybe.
Oh,
well, we'll see. Welcome, everybody, back to the Producer's Choice Show, the only show where you can see two men be guests on their own show. I'm your host, Producer Jacob. Folks, we live in tumultuous times these days. If you thought 2025 had a lot of tumult, buddy, let me tell you about 2026. We got a war with Venezuela. The president is proving that some oranges do bruise. I was pausing for laughter on that one, if you guys want to.
The laugh track.
And we're preparing to attack Greenland, despite also being in a treaty that binds us to defend Greenland from anyone who attacks it, which I can only assume means we're about to start bombing ourselves any minute now. In short, that's what I call a lot of tumult.
Tumult.
Folks, when we have tumultuous times, there's one thing you can expect to always follow in its wake, and that is angry young people. The kids don't like wars, they don't like a cranky, evil president, and frankly, even in the best of times, they don't care much for the man in general. And what do they do when they're fed up with the man? They do their protests. We're going to be talking about protests today, gentlemen.
Ooh. Love it.
I've brought in two experts in complaining about things today.
Yeah, sir. What grinds our gears. That's the theme.
Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny, guys, thanks for coming back on your own show.
Thanks, sir. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Whew.
I want to start off by asking you guys a simple question about introducing this topic, and it is this. As a teacher, how do you go into your classroom in the morning after our country makes a big controversial decision like invading Iraq or kidnapping the president of Venezuela? How do you enter that room with kids who are hearing a lot of crazy news and might have a lot of thoughts on it? I'm going to start with you, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci.
Well, first thing, Jacob, is I go to my closet and I pick out my best Nike Tech suit, right? And I go in dressed in my full Madero.
Very outfit. Good.
No, you know, Jacob, this is a great question. And I'm gonna kind of pivot a bit to it because unfortunately we have had to teach both Tim and I, we'd be in the classroom during a lot of violent conflict that involved the US, especially like you said, like day after kind of stuff, whether it was day after 9/11 or was invasions of Iraq, right? Whether it was battles in Afghanistan, you know, or different world conflicts, whether more recently it was the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, right? Or, you know, other violent conflict on the planet. Again, this is always something that teachers need to handle with what we call making sure you're working at the developmental level of your students, right? So it's going to be different in, say, high school and middle school than it is in elementary and in earlier grades. But the first thing is, you know, we always talk about what's going on in the world. And you don't kind of be that adult in children's lives, whatever age they are. I'll even include high school students as children in our community, right? We don't pretend that we are just like not observing what's going on in the world, or, you know, it's not too political to have a position that reminds kids to get good information and reminds them that, hey, when violent conflict is going on, it's a great time to recenter ourselves around the different work people do around the world to ensure peace, right? To really work towards, you know, eliminating or alleviating the danger of violent conflict for communities around the world. So in short, Jacob, you know, you never pretend something's not going on or say, oh, I hope we're not going to bring that up today. You as a teacher are prepared when you go into class for what's going on in the world, right? You get good information and you ask students what's happening and they might bring that up, right? And or you might even say, hey, I understand some people might be a little bit nervous from some of the things or have some concerns about what they saw on social media or what they're getting in, you know, the news, if they've tuned in over the weekend, or maybe their parents have, that there is a violent conflict, and you kind of use it as an opportunity. Here's the social studies teacher and me coming out to teach some geography, right? Reminding kids where this is, what's going on. And then I always pivot to, this is sort of my go-to and what I teach a lot of teachers to be aware of and to go to is, hey, what are sort of our human rights and children's rights around the world? And reminding them that it's grown-ups' responsibility to really be working hard to ensure the safety of children everywhere in the world, right? And so you kind of address the immediate concern that they might have, thinking developmentally, like a little person, like a second grader, might not know that Venezuela is in South America and that South America is far away, right? And that they aren't in the immediate moment in danger. So you're kind of addressing a little bit of triage, like quelling some brooding anxiety and fear, and reminding them there are people in our governments around the world, right? This is nonpartisan, right? There are adults whose job it is. There are diplomats, there are ambassadors, there are, you know, political positions around the world of people who are meeting to figure out how to make things safe for children and families everywhere, right? And so reminding them immediately first that they're not in that moment in any danger. And then two, then going over some of the geography and talking about that so that they have a little bit of frame of reference for not taking it on as their worry that day, right? But also not ignoring it. And you're sort of building that worldview and that empathy that's so important in democratic citizenship of understanding sort of the way violence plays out, like from violent conflict. Another example, Jacob, is more recently for us, the invasion of Ukraine, right? And a lot of teachers have like going into the classroom after that and probably having Ukrainian immigrants in their classroom or Ukrainian families in their community, or same thing for the conflict in Gaza, which I probably shouldn't even call it conflict. I need to look up the official label of it, but you know, the violence in Gaza right now and of the past few years, and being able to say, hey, some people in our communities probably have family members there, right? They probably have, you probably have concerns, and those are real. But I'm here for you. You're safe today. And let's learn about what people are doing, what grownups are doing to make sure families are safe everywhere, right? So kind of turning it towards not shying away from it or sidestepping the heaviness of it, right? But also acknowledging like this is an opportunity for us to learn, because you're building a foundation for them as adults to be decision makers. When they grow up, they'll be in positions to vote. They'll be in positions, maybe some of them, to be doing that work, right? To ensure peace for people everywhere. So that's a big one, Jacob. I always teach teachers not to shy away from it, but also to put it into developmentally appropriate context. Use it as an opportunity to teach geography and to highlight it's grown-ups' responsibilities. Say it over and over again. Hey, that's a grown-up problem. Right. Our job is to be good learners in our classroom and become grown-ups who make good decisions. And let's get good information about this, pay attention to it, and learn about what's happening in our world.
Right? I'm getting from you, Johnny, that it's kind of we're all going to be a couple of Fonzies right now. Everybody be cool. OK, there's a lot of stuff going on in this world, but we're going to. Let's try to be cool here in this classroom together.
Be cool. Be cool, Jacob, and be real. Right. Yeah. Because we don't want to say we're not going to talk about that, or we don't want to say, oh, you know, that's nothing you need to worry about. Like those are two things that are absolute no's from a responsible grown up in a situation where little people are looking at you as a model worldview.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be in a particular political group. You can either be in support of something that's happening or against it or unsure because it's complicated, as many of us are most of the time. You know, we're not sure where we stand on things, but it's okay to say, hey, let's learn about what's happening so that we're informed and so that we can feel safe as learners together and see what we can do to maybe support those adults whose job it is to ensure peace. And I even remind students all the time, hey, when you're a grown-up, maybe you're a lawyer, maybe you're a doctor, maybe you're a teacher. You'll be the people, the adults in our community, responsible for the safety of families and children. And so let's do the best learning we can today to stay safe and stay empathetic to what's happening, because in all violent conflict, nobody's winning. That's what I always say all the time. I said, you know, this is a heavy moment. So I validate where kids' concerns are coming from, but I shy away from saying, oh, you know what? Oh, that's a really bad thing that's happening, because you know, now all of a sudden, now we're taking a position that is ill-informed and that doesn't really help kids navigate it developmentally where they're at, because it's usually more complex than black or white.
Yeah.
Right. So I like to say, let's use it as an opportunity to learn together and never shy away from the tough stuff.
I want to take an opportunity to ask another compassionate grown-up here about his take on this. And I think there will be a lot of similarities and maybe a couple other thoughts and ideas to bring into it, too. Tim, when you're coming into a classroom full of young people, of course, young people are still people. They've got thoughts. They've got ideas. How do you go into that classroom after a big controversial event happens in our country?
Well, Johnny, you know, kind of already dissed my answer, which is we're not going to talk about that. And don't you worry about it. You'll just be fine. No, obviously, sarcasm here. I think ask me this question. This is to me the kind of reality we're in. Ask me that question 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, today. I would actually love to see myself answering the question over that time span. I get a sense that probably for the first 15 of those years, I was probably really consistent, maybe even slightly a little bit of edgy to even potentially offer a little bit of my sense. And again, though, age specific, age dependent, you know, so my very first year of teaching, I was teaching second grade in Virginia. And that was 1990, 91. And if you remember what happened in 1991, Operation, what do we call that operation then?
Desert Storm.
And, you know, it was interesting too, because being down in, you know, southeastern Virginia around, you know, Newport News, where naval bases and lots of military, you know, there was increased activity around our school, you know, practice. I mean, when you want to hear fighter jets going overhead, holy crap. And while you're teaching, right? And so you're like, well, you know, what's that about? But, you know, we knew it's like, well, there was, you know, this happened, this bad person, you know, and in that place, like, you could hear there was judgmental, because it was like that bad person, Saddam Hussein, invaded, you know, a neutral country, and America now is, you know, trying to do its best. And so there, that was my very first year of teaching. Like, whoa, here we are. You know, I think that Johnny, you know, comprehensively, let's point it out there, really laid out the reality of how we should be approaching these things, which is it's a teaching and learning opportunity. And so as a teacher, we're really called at that moment to absolutely not ignore the moment. You know, kids are thinking about it. There's conversations at the dinner table. There's conversations on the playground. There's conversations at choir practice, right? They've got thoughts. They know about these things and they want to ask questions. And so the first thing for me is always to say, you know, what are your questions? And potentially then too, even being prepared for, this is one of the great ones. My dad said, and you're like, okay. The best response a teacher could give to my dad said is not, well, he's an idiot. you know, I mean, because that's really though. And again, you're talking about, you know, when with fifth graders, where I spent a lot of my classroom time is with fifth graders. I mean, that's the kind of sensibilities, because they are informed. They're mature enough to want to talk about these things, but a lot of the things they're talking about, they've heard. And so I used to hear that, you know, my sister said, my grandfather said, and my dad, and boy, that's a place where you go, well, that's an interesting comment, you know, and your dad is absolutely allowed to have that. And, you know, we're going to keep, well, what do you think about, you know, Jacob's dad's comment, Mr. Slecker? I'm like, well, that's, you know, again, that's not what we're doing here.
Mr. Slecker, my dad said these colors don't run.
But we think about how Johnny, you know, the in-depth answer Johnny gave and the way I'm talking about this. My concern, though, too, even as we're talking about it, is, boy, that sounds challenging then to actually do that. And so more often than we're not going to talk about that, or don't you worry your little heads, and or wow, we've got to get back to phonics, because, you know, that's what really matters. I think what happens is when teachers potentially hear what Johnny and I are saying, it's like, man, that's complex stuff they're talking about. And you know what? I'm going to move away from it, to, you know, even downplay it and say, you know, what I've been seeing from some things is, you know, what the best teacher should do is point out when a student brings this up, that's a topic for you and your family to continue talking about. Today, we're going to talk about Silas Marner. And you're like, I mean, and you get why a teacher might say something like that, or why that advice is given, because particularly now, you go, the last thing you want to do is then be accused of pointing out a position that or a student might interpret that you were advocating a position, or, you know, here's the thing. Yeah, it was great today. We had this great conversation in class today, and Mr. Slecker said, and it may not be anything that I really said. And so what's the best defense on that is to make sure Mr. Slecker never said a damn thing. And you know, that's the frightening part. And I think it's an incredibly lost responsibility of a public school teacher to be addressing those issues when they come up. And I said, you know, whether I was preparing future teachers or my fifth grade, we would start today. What's going on in the world? Let's talk about it. They want to talk about it, and then move on. And then I could teach my crappy reading lesson. You know, because that was moved on. But I also, with future teachers specifically, I'm like, you have a responsibility to actually know how to talk about these things. You can't continue to say, well, I don't read the news, therefore I don't have to talk about it. I'm like, no, that's not the role of a teacher. You are, again, a public school teacher. You are helping create the future of democracy. And the future of democracy is not saying that, hey, we're not going to talk about that because I'm not informed. You know, that's irresponsible dereliction of duty to say, I'm not informed. I don't know. If that's the case, maybe you might want to reconsider teaching. And I'd made that statement to some of my future teachers that would point out and say, you know, especially I did a lot of pre-service elementary school teachers, and I would get but Dr. Slecker, you know, I'm going to be teaching second graders. We're not going to talk about those things, so I don't need to know. It was I see Johnny in agreement going like, you've had these conversations too, right?
Absolutely. And not to pivot too far from the, you know, tumultuous stuff Jacob opened with, that's very real and very much in the lives of children. But we talk about it related to other things like school shootings. Mm. That's on the mind of kids. Those are heavy things that are about violent conflict in a different context, but similar. Also, just natural disaster kind of stuff, floods, mudslides, earthquakes, fires. That's a big one locally here is the fires. Maybe, you know, we have a lot of wildfires in the late summer here in Washington. Most recently, some devastating fires in California, which is not too far from us, but in the news. And kids say, oh, well, it's smoky here. And I'm seeing, you know, families fleeing, neighborhoods being burnt that look like my neighborhood. And so are we as a teacher going to say, no, we're not talking about that today? No, we have an obligation as an adult in the room to say, hey, let's learn about where that's happening, what's going on, and how and what are the responsibilities that adults in our community have, right, to make sure that families and children are safe, right?
I will say this too. What I'm not advocating, and I know Johnny's not advocating this though too, is to feel that you must know everything, okay? No. And in fact, if there is an issue where it comes up in a classroom, like you just said, John, you know, hey, I was really busy. I had my own kids.
They were
at baseball practice. I got lesson plans doing. I'm in here in school. Yeah. I didn't even see the news yet today. In that case, though, too, you say, you know what? That's a great question. I haven't really looked at or understand that yet at this moment. Yeah. So when I get a chance to read and know a little bit more, maybe we'll revisit that. But for now, I can't, because you're being honest. And that's the same thing. A kid asks a question. I was, you know, first year, it's like, what do I do if I don't know the answer? You tell them you don't know the answer. That's what you do. It's just like, you know.
Right. Yeah, like Jacob said, be cool. And what he means by that is be regulated as an adult, right? Don't be in a panic and all like high energy, never too high, never too low. Right. It's not being a panic. Be cool, but also be real. Like Tim, you're saying, like, if you don't know, that's okay too. Like we've all been there. It's like third busy day in a row and something happens and, you know, and we've all been there. Even those of us with the habit of getting good information daily, you know, you're I'm in my third hour of math lessons of the day, and kids are already like, you know what's happening in New York? It's like, whoa. And that's me directly referencing, you know, my experience of being in the classroom for 9/11. And it's like, we're going to figure this out. Right. And it's going to be part of all of our lives and learning. So let's learn together, or let Mr. Lupinacci have a minute to get good information. And we're going to learn about that. In the meantime, we're going to trust the grown people of this world, of our democracy, and of this great earth that we're a part of, that there are adults working around the clock to address this. And let's get good information together and learn. I love it. Jacob, you gave us the lingo. Be cool. Be real.
I think you guys are barking up the correct tree here in terms of, arf, arf, arf. We come in the next day after a big thing happens, how to try to, you know, not control as in, you know, hierarchical stuff, but just how to keep everybody cool, have a good constructive conversation with people who are likely experiencing all sorts of different emotions and have different views on things that are happening. We're talking about protests today, and we're almost out of time, so I'm going to give you both 4.5 minutes each to respond to this. But when the de-escalation doesn't work and people are still amped up, this is more on a college campus. Kids are going, they're having a sit-in, or they're picketing, or they're having a little bit of a protest about what's going on in the world. I want to ask you guys, as educators, talking about the teacher perspective, the administrative perspective, how do schools and universities handle balancing legitimate student expression while still maintaining order and campus safety? I know it's a big question, but in the broad strokes, Tim, what's that calculus like?
I mean, you know, we've seen how, you know, particularly, in, you know, 2 to 3 years ago, potentially some places where maybe this isn't how you can do this. I'm going to get a sense that, I think I may have even changed a little bit of my tune on what I would suggest how that's handled. I think there was a point in time where I would have been like, hey, it's a protest. It's freedom of speech. If you want to go for it, you go for it. And, you know, however that is. But, you know, the other kind of reality is that, you know, can you, quote, have a free speech zone? And people are like, that's not free speech if I have to go somewhere to have my free speech. And it's like, well, you know, this comes into saying, okay, what do we mean by free speech? You know, a university, it's private property, and or in the case of a public institution, you know, that's where somebody's like, it's a public institution, I'll protest where I want. Well, really? No, because as you point out, First Amendment, I can't get in, I can't disrupt my fellow students in them pursuing their day if they don't want to be a participant, right? You know, I'm like, I can see Johnny getting ready to chomp on this one, because I think we might be, I'm probably a little more on the, it depends side. Because things have changed. I mean, I remember going to a protest in 1986.
Whoa.
On my
back in the old century.
Back in the old century.
Hell no, you can't invade Grenada. Not on Tim's watch.
No, but I mean, this is an ill-informed college kid. I mean, me and this other guy and two at that time, like truly punk rock kids, I was just moving in that direction. And, you know, we were protesting something that they were angry about that was happening in the art department. And so my roommate and I were like, yeah, let's go hang out with, you know, Steve and Joe, the punk rock kids on, you know, because they asked us if we wanted to come. It was like, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know. I was like, yeah, it's cool. I'm on college. I'm away from my parents. I'm going to a protest. And there we are, you know, four dweebs standing, you know, in front of the art building. We accomplished nothing. I don't know, you know, but I learned something. But I think that rules around protesting, if you're a student protester, you have a responsibility to find out what those rules are, and you should follow them. Johnny.
Awesome. Yeah, Tim, I like that. I mean, I'm with you on that. And it's I'll put that responsibility on teachers, right? Peace is not passivity. democracy is not being silent. So especially developmentally appropriate, we're talking high school. Maybe you're referring, Jacob, to like protest as a form of like organized walkout.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a supervised protest in terms of where youth voice is not only validated, but it's, you know, empowered. And I think it's an important aspect of our democracy to embrace and celebrate peaceful protest. And peace is not passivity. And that's for us teachers to teach, especially social studies teachers. Talk about the importance of voice and numbers, right? Talk about, you know, organizing and the, you know, the, like Tim says, the rules, but I kind of say the conventions, right? What is peaceful protest? Well, it isn't passivity. It isn't saying, well, you're young, shut up and, you know, get back in your desk and, you know, focus on the math worksheet. It's, hey, let's talk about this and let's actually organize together. Let's be informed. And if we're going to make a difference with our voice, let's make sure we know what that's like. And there's a tradition, there's a convention to peaceful protest that is absolutely paramount to any democracy, right? And so I think we're in this moment, though, Jacob, where things are really vitriol. I think that's the term. Like there's a real anger, kind of hate, good versus bad, and both sides think they're the good. You know, there's a danger in that kind of protest. And I think what's important is teach-ins, right? Big time learning opportunities for groups to have a stance together to say, we're not for this. Maybe it's, you know, a youth protest against, you know, increased threats to climate change, to all these kinds of things, you know, or to, you know, excessive police violence. That's certainly been one near and dear to a lot of our younger hearts in the last few years here in, you know, the U.S., but even around the world. Maybe it's increased political violence. Maybe it's school shootings. We've seen a lot of organizing of young people after school shootings. And so I think these are important things for us to teach, not in the sense of the stereotyped sort of big media representation of like protest is rioting, but more in the sense of protest is democracy in action. Right? It's coming together to say, hey, we're not sure about this, but what we are sure about is that the threat and danger that young people are in is unacceptable to us as young people. So let's organize our voice. And like Tim says, know the rules, right? Well, we also should teach them, right? What is the appropriate way to exercise your democratic voice, which is also a civic responsibility. So I've always been a big fan of, it's not saying, hey, let's teach a protest against something specific with, you know, with like sort of a vitriol nature where we're just like angry, man, I'm so frustrated at, you know, the way we use water in this community. I'm going to, you know, protest and we're going to shut down school until, you know, we ban water bottles. Well, like, hey, let's come up with a good plan. Let's meet with decision makers, sort of principals, administrators, superintendents, teachers. Let's get together and learn what we can do differently as a community to address something that, like you said, Jacob, we've explored some different options and we don't seem to be heard, listened to, or taken seriously. And that's for any level of things. We see that peaceful protest is not passivity. It's important, but it's also not anything goes, right? You can't just run out there and scream and yell about something. You got to organize together and empower youth voice or community voice or democratic voice, whatever we want to call it. Let's build unity, solidarity, and be heard together. And there are some great examples of that. So social studies teachers, history teachers out there, you know, maybe you're listening in Madison. I remember one of my most formidable moments as a young teacher being in the capital of Wisconsin in Madison when the teachers and lots of students and lots of families went to, right, the state building in defense of the, was it Act 10? Tim, you would know more specifically. I was sort of a learner. Act 10.
Act 10.
Yeah. And, you know, shared their experiences and peacefully, you know, spoke out against the enclosure of public education and some of the, you know, like less than ideal political decisions being made in the state. And I remember a teacher there turning to me and saying, this is what democracy looks like. And man, I couldn't, Jacob, think of a more powerful example. Peaceful protest is what democracy looks like. And around the world, we see that. And some of the most formidable moments for our young learners out there, like high school students, that's like Tim referenced it, that punk rock ethos. It's not anything goes, but it's saying, hey, we're not being heard. So what can we do together for us to be heard? And sometimes it's be loud. Sometimes it's, you know, make art that's disruptive. But understand the conventions of that. Don't do it in ways that bring harm to your community. Do it in ways that build peace and solidarity. So I think that's an important part of it too, Jacob. I'm a big fan of learning what it is as an important tool, an important part of democracy, so that when it's necessary, right, civil disobedience can be put to practice in a really artful and peaceful way. Peace is not passivity, and we got to teach young people that.
What I'm hearing from both of you guys, in not just talking about the protest, but talking about the reaction to crazy events happening in the world and the passions of our young people, is that the role of teachers in all of this is to make sure that kids know that they're being heard, that they're having these conversations, and that they can express their views in a healthy, safe way, whether it's having discussions in a classroom or protesting in a peaceful, safe manner. It's about giving young people those avenues to take those feelings that they do legitimately have and express them in constructive and good ways. I think that's a good place to end this conversation for today. I've got, of course, as always, one last thing I like to do here on the program. We're going to keep it in 2026 as well.
Let's go.
Going to give you guys 60 seconds, starting, of course, with Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. We're a Midwest-based radio show and podcast. The Chicago Bears and Green Bay Packers are squaring off in tomorrow's playoff game. Big deal for Wisconsin and Illinois. Johnny, who's going to win that game? 60 seconds.
The Bears. The Bears. The Bears.
The Bears.
The Bears. The Bears, the Bears. No, it's an uphill battle for them, I think. But, you know, I'm sitting this one out as a Lions fan. I'm a little, you know, I'm a little butthurt over here, distant from my club. But nonetheless, man, the Bears have impressed me. It takes a couple of big plays and a rowdy crowd, which I know they'll have there, you know, in Chicago. And I'm rooting for the Bears.
Very good. Thank you, Johnny. I'm a Bears fan. Everybody in Wisconsin will not be glad to hear that, though I know we do have a small Bears diaspora up here in Wisconsin. So I'm with you guys. Dr. Tim Slecker, I know that you've studied both these teams extensively all season long. Who are you taking, Bears or Packers, in the playoffs tomorrow?
The A's.
Very good. Fellas, thank you for joining me. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, two of the best in the business. And Tim, I think there's time for one last thing.
Hey, you know, your moment of zen. Historically, the most terrible things, war, genocide, and slavery, have resulted not from disobedience, but from obedience.
Hey there, Pencil Busters. This is producer Jacob, and thank you for listening to the Producer's Choice Show. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the Busted Pencils programs, starting out Monday with Homeroom, Wednesday with Class in Session, and of course, you can always find us every Saturday across the Civic Media Network for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim, Johnny, and Jacob, and keep busting pencils.